Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we're having a real talk with a real leader, and we're breaking down a hot topic to help you take your game to the next level. Today's episode, we are going to be breaking down making work better with a friend of mine, someone who has become a dear friend, actually, folks, Dawn Sowerby. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It feels like a genuine privilege. I'm so excited, as you might be able to tell. And I'm all the way over in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for making it work with the time change and everything. And I know we've both had so much going on in our world. So folks, this episode has been in the works for a while. Dawn and I met each other through a training. And so we'll talk about this throughout the episode. It's called the GC Index. It's a tool that we use, but it's so much more than a tool that each of us uses in our consulting and work. So Dawn, you are the founder of the Culture Business. And this is why, actually, folks, the topic of the show, this episode, is breaking down making work better, because as I've looked into your business a bit, Dawn, that is your sole focus, as you've written. It is to focus on making work better. So give us a foundation of what you do and who you work with.
It's so good that you picked up what's right at the heart of it, Shauna, because it is all about that. I've been around in work quite a long time now, and I think we're getting it so wrong in some situations. So I just feel so passionately that we are at work for too much of our time for that to be an unhappy place, a place where we aren't able to be our true selves, a place where we aren't able to be productive and to be trusted and safe. And of course, if we manage to spin that and make work better to create those kind of work environments, then everybody wins. The people win because we're all happier in a better place. Organisations win because they're more effective and more profitable and more productive. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. And I really love how you hone in on the human aspect and what you mentioned there about the authenticity, because that truly is when we're honored as humans in the workplace, not treated as robots who are expected to just show up at work and click the keyboards and be in the meetings and sort of tune out other factors that are going on or if our needs are met. It's such a common thing, I think, in business these days to get into that mode where you lose the human aspect. So I really just appreciate and want to champion your efforts with what you're doing, because sometimes I think it does take an outside perspective to come into an organization and say, hey, folks, let's pick our heads up and assess how close we are to that human aspect, or how far actually, you know, that we gotten into that systems and processes and stepped away too far away from that human aspect.
One thing that I find myself saying to my clients more than anything else is, whatever business you think you're in the people business. We cannot do it without the people. Yeah. It's unthinkable to think we can do it without the people, and yet we structure our organizations and in many cases manage them in a way that doesn't take into account the wonderful unpredictability of people and the difference that we all bring. So it feels in so many ways that it's always been about people. It still is about people, and it always will be about people. But then we set up our structures in organizations to manage people almost as if they are predictable, as if they are a process. And so one of my key premises is people can't be managed because they can't be predicted. Do you see?
Yeah, absolutely. I really appreciate that part. And so it's interesting because I've been talking quite a bit in the consulting work that I do about the fact that people are predictably unpredictable. So it is. It's a really great point that you bring forward here. And we as leaders need to keep that in mind when we are operating with our people. And, you know, again, it goes, and I would love to talk to you about this, for you to talk about this, excuse me, because we've talked about it before. But the elements that aren't working, again, it goes into those systems, and they're actually set up to create, you mentioned this one day, I wrote it down, was like they create actually these illusions. So talk to us about what is it that you're seeing out there that's for lack of a better word, just not working for people.
Yeah. Well, what, funny enough, one of the things that I see more often than not is that, well, first of all, let's start from the basic premise. We're all people. So whatever role we have in organizations, we are a person. But then we get employed in a certain role with an organization that might be called a manager or might be called a leader. And all of a sudden, we treat other people like they're not people anymore. And so we now we're in that position. We kind of treat them as if they're processes or if they're systems. So it's a really bizarre kind of construct that we've created, that people are people are people. We're all people. People manage people. And it's people who do our jobs. But then we set up our systems to almost deny the fact that it is people that we're dealing with. So we create this illusion of control by the process and systems that we put in place. So usually when you think about managing people, you're thinking of control, you're thinking of compliance, you're thinking of contract, things like that. Those are the things that will not work with people. People need to be inspired rather than managed. So when you have things like, for example, a really small example is a job description. Now, it's a personal view, I think, all job descriptions need to be thrown in the bin because once you have used it to get to a price point for a particular job, it has no use anymore, or very limited use. So probably in your audience, if you were to ask people, when was the last time you looked at your own job description to inform what you needed to do on a daily basis, most people would say, well, not since the day I applied for the job, because there's just no need. But having that job description as something to refer to can give a manager an illusion of control, but it's not control at all. It's just a two-dimensional process. So it tells you nothing about how good somebody's going to be, how capable they're going to be, and what they need to be the most energized and the best version of themselves in the work context on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's such a great point. It truly is. I don't think we don't look at them. Even roles and responsibilities is another extension of that job description. And I think we go about, and we might get defined as this is your role and this is your responsibility. Again, that has people operating in this, you're in this box, this, you know, now I am a robot. But to your point, like, how do I actually feel fulfilled as a human, as a person, to come and do the best work I can do? And you mentioned inspiring. And I think that's such an important thing when we think about ourselves as leaders. First of all, that means that we're actually out in the front. Doesn't necessarily, obviously, I believe that we can be, you know, there's the like, you can lead from behind as well as lead from the front. But what I mean by that is that you're going to go first. You may, if, you know, if there's a risk or something, you're going to go first. You're going to take responsibility of things. You're going to ensure that you're helping to create an environment where people are actually set up for success. And so, you know, again, that doesn't usually have all these very defined, robotic, you know, rigid boundaries. We have to be able to be aware of ourselves and others and be adaptable, be resilient. You know, you hear me talk about the leadership athlete mindset, and I think those things are just so important, but they don't follow those rigid rules.
Yeah. People don't fundamentally change who they are ever. They might, given a particular crisis or certain type of situation, but in the main, people fundamentally don't change who they are. So you know, it's no good trying to manage that. You've got to change the context, not the person. If the person isn't at their best, change the conditions around them. Make it so that each person can thrive and can deliver the best, to the very best version of themselves. But, you know, I use the job description of one example, and that's like something that people can picture as a document, but there are lots of other practices that are built with the intention of giving some systematization, some control to the way that we manage our people, because it feels like we've got it under control then. It feels like we can recognize it and we can make it more predictable. And I guess what my argument is you can't do that. It is an illusion. So another example might be one-to-one conversations with people. It's a really good practice. It's a brilliant practice for managers to talk to their team managers on a very regular basis. But the very idea that a conversation that's documented and recorded on a routine basis, the very idea that that would create the best conditions for somebody is just, you know, it's ridiculous. We're kidding ourselves. You know, it's about what that person needs to be able to thrive, who they are, where they get their energy, what do they need from the team, from the organization, from the manager to be the very best version of themselves. That's what makes the difference. That's what gives you the outcome. The one-to-one conversation or the document that you complete, for example, an appraisal document, that's just an input, you know? So again, it's the illusion of control. It's not actually there. So some of these are practices that were grown in the Industrial Revolution, and they really served a purpose. They served as well in that time when life, you know, probably at least in the UK anyway, 80% of people would have been employed in a manufacturing industry or in agriculture, and it's completely flipped now. So, you know, in today's workforce, probably 80% of people are in a knowledge economy. So we're employing them for their brain, for their cognitive capability, for their ability to think independently, to think critically, to make judgments, and to be able to use that judgment to good effect. So the controls that are in place to manage people that were grown up in the Industrial Revolution aren't serving us in that kind of economy.
Yeah, it's so interesting when you say it that way to think that we're about to be in 2025 and we are still using these constructs that were made at that time period. And to the point that you're in the UK, I'm in the US, this is something that's pervasive across the world. It's not just in one little area. So it just actually begs the question of, like, why would someone even think that those constructs, those systems that were built at that time really would apply today? It's so interesting. It just, to your point, and we were talking about this earlier, I love that what you bring forth so much is curiosity. Mm-hmm. You'll write it sometimes, you'll say on LinkedIn, folks, I love Dawn's LinkedIn posts. They bring so much curiosity, information, insight to bear. And you'll say, like, isn't it curious that? And that's the thing. Isn't it curious that we are trying to still use these outdated practices? And I mean, it's literally outdated when you look at the dates of things. Yeah. Here's the question I have for you, that if people in the audience are thinking, we, within this business, I do need to create controls and I cannot treat people differently, right? We need to have policies that they think of equity, they think equality means the same thing for everyone. We have titles, we have these salaries at certain titles, all those type of things. So how can we share with the audience the idea of moving away from that? How do we think about shift that perspective to actually embrace this approach that you're talking about?
Well, I think we have to do what you're suggesting that you and I do already, which is to get curious. We have to stop making the assumptions that these things are working. So what is it that we think they're doing? What is the risk that we believe these policies and practices and processes are protecting us from? And how do we know what's the evidence that they actually are doing anymore? So you talked about equitable treatment and the fact that maybe these policies and processes are built up to try and do that. And my suggestion is that oftentimes they don't actually do that at all. And again, it's an illusion. So fairness doesn't mean exactly the same. You know, it's really important that people working in organizations today feel that they're being treated fairly. Absolutely crucial. That's part of feeling that you're in a psychologically safe environment, and that this is a good employer. You know, why would you go somewhere else? Because I feel I'm being treated really fairly. That does not equate, in my view, to being treated exactly the same, because I will be different to you, Shauna. You know, there are around about 68 million people in the UK. I think there's probably maybe six times that in the USA. The idea that all of those people are going to respond to being treated in the same way through a set of policies and procedures that were wrote down once and made sense by the person who wrote them, but actually don't translate to anything beneficial for each individual person, it's just bizarre. It beggars belief to me. So I think we need to really question the purpose of these documents. Why are they there? Where are they serving us and where are they not serving us? Are they delivering the intention that was behind creating them in the first place? Yeah. So, give you an example. What we have in the United Kingdom is employment tribunals. I don't know if you have the same thing over there. If somebody's been treated unfairly and they lose their job, they can make an employment claim. Oftentimes, policies and practices are built up because of the perception that an employment tribunal is the biggest risk the biggest people risk that an organization will face. And I would say it's absolutely not the biggest risk at all. Your biggest risk is getting the wrong people or putting the right people in the wrong place. That's right. Your biggest risk. Not some sort of transactional notion of a claim that might come if certain conditions are in place further down the way. Do you see? So I think we're confusing operational risk with strategic risk, and maybe we just need to flip that conversation a little bit as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's about really getting underneath why. What do we think? How do we think this is serving us? Why did we create it in the first place? And is it delivering what we intended?
Yeah. And something that you talk about is, how can you afford not to do this type of work?
Yeah.
Which actually starts to point to, not to be fear-mongering by any means, but it's like, but I would love for you to talk about, what are some of the things that you're seeing out there when people don't take this approach? You know, I mean, on the very, very top surface, it's unhappy staff, attrition, those type of things. But I helped to answer that question that you posed so well about, like, how can you afford not to do this? Type I think of work.
I think it's maybe when we link it, Shauna, into the results of the organization. So what I do is never come away from what it is that the business is trying to achieve. This isn't about trying to create a bubble for employees that bears no relevance to the success or failure of the business, right? Mm-hmm. It's ultimately about business results. That's what matters. We cannot take our eye off that. But what we see from all of the evidence that's out there repeatedly over years of hundreds of thousands of people is that there is really strong positive connections between high levels of employee engagement and high levels of productivity or profitability or organizational success. Now, to my knowledge, there's still not been any causality found. So there's nothing that I'm aware of anyway that says that increasing levels of engagement will directly drive organizational outcomes. But it's enough for me to know that there is a really strong connection, and it's a positive connection. So it makes sense. If you can create an environment where people are happy, people will deliver more, they will deliver their best efforts, they will give you that extra discretionary effort that they have got that they don't actually need to, but they'll try harder, in other words, and then your business grows. So it kind of makes economic sense, it makes commercial sense, and it makes kind of moral sense to me as well, in terms of just creating better workspaces for people overall.
Yeah. And you posted something one day, and I sound like I'm a total super fan, which I am. You were talking about... something that you were posting was really talking about that... each person, if you actually think about it, people want to be successful at their job. So if they're not, instead of taking the approach of, you must be bucking the system, you must be, it's like, well, actually, let's sit down and have a conversation around what's going on here. Where are you not being set up for success? What's not working? And then if the person is truly doesn't want to be there, then that's a whole nother conversation that, you know, but again, if we actually are operating on the premise that people want to be successful, they want to be giving their best, they want to be achieving results. And to your point about, it all comes down to what business impact that is at the forefront of things. People want to actually contribute to the business impact. And so if you can share a bit about just that mindset, because I think this is where some of the shifting has to start to happen before you can talk about, we're going to talk about this differently in our leadership meetings and those type of things, and get really like, we actually have to talk about that next layer of what are the shifts that we need to start making if we want to do these things. And I really think that has to do with like just simple perspective shifting. It's, you know, we were talking earlier about, I think you said something about like assumptions, like not making assumptions, getting curious, you know, those type of things. So your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have some really sort of unwavering and unshakable beliefs in people, and they're just conclusions that I feel that I've had to come to. So I know we might be talking a little bit about the game changing index in a moment. As a high strategist, and this will make sense to folks if we do get on to talk about it, as a high strategist, sense making is really important to me. So I am fairly continually trying to square the circle of why things are happening, seeing patterns, seeing connections, just thinking about how to make the world make sense. So the basic underlying premise for me is the world does make sense. I've just got to figure it out. And so if we bring it back to people in the workplace, Shauna, I can only make sense of it by assuming that everybody's the same as I am, in really broad terms, and wanting to do a good job. And if you're unsure about that, flip it and think about the other way. Do you really think anybody comes into work wanting to do a bad job, wanting to fail, wanting to let their team down, wanting to be part of an underperforming rather than a high-performing team? And that again, just beggars belief to me. So I'm willing to believe there might be a teeny, teeny, tiny number of people who might fit into that category, but not so big that you want to spend a whole lot of resources trying to manage them, right? So it makes sense for me to believe that people actually want to do a good job. Mm-hmm. So at the time that somebody comes into your organisation, you've chosen them, they've chosen you. They turn up on the first day in a state of what I would call engagement ready. Day one, somebody wants to succeed. They have got ideas. They're raring to go. They're enthusiastic. They just can't wait to get stuck in. And then at some point down the line, something goes wrong. That does happen. But for me, that's not a reason to conclude that the person therefore has become toxic or has become persona non grata and rubbish. You know, we should never have selected them. At some point, you believe they were the right person for the organisation. What's changed? Because they haven't changed. What in the context has changed that is no longer enabling them or inspiring them to deliver their best efforts? And it's always worth sort of looking in the mirror first before we point at the person.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are going to talk about the GC Index. So as I mentioned in the beginning of the episode, the GC Index is I'm going to put air quotes around an assessment tool. And the reason why I do that is because it is so powerful. It is, to me, it is way beyond an assessment tool. I think sometimes when I would first started working with it and I would call it an assessment tool, people would say like, oh yeah, I've done things like that.
Yeah.
And they would name the thing and then they would name the letters that define them in a very specific way. And I was like, oh wait, no. The GC Index, it's highly actionable. It is an assessment tool. To your point earlier about energy, it does measure your people's natural energy. And there's five areas that it, so to your point, game changers, one, strategist, you mentioned you're a high strategist, implementers, polishers, and playmakers. Mm-hmm. And so folks, it is an assessment between, the range is 1 to 10. So we'll talk a little bit about our respective scores to give some context to this. As you say, your dominant energies, your top two energies. So mine are game changer and strategist, and yours are
strategist, game changer.
I love that.
We get on so well.
very true. And folks, it's so much more again than just saying that's what you are. You're a strategist, game changer, Dawn.
Yeah.
It's saying, now that we know this information, right? So it's data, it's insights, then we can start to, and you also know the other, that rounding out of your scoring, you're able to understand, to your point around that self-awareness, where's your energy? How are you operating and why are you operating in certain ways? Then you can look at that impact with the team and within the organization. It's so highly actionable because then you can start to utilize that. It's a whole new language that you're learning. And I like to say, you know, it's actually taking effect when your language starts to change, yeah. Which I love to see with clients that I work with. And then the other element is the two AI tools that are built into it. GC Translate, which helps you to, when you input language that's out there, you can actually see the difference between perception and intention and perception, either way you want to say it.
Yeah.
And then the other is the new one, GCT. GCT, thank you, which I've actually been using it, but somehow I've always messed around the word. But it's so incredible. It's been trained in the language of the GC Index. So folks, that's the very, very high level. Dawn, what do you want to add to that? What did I leave out? What do you think is so critical about it?
I don't think you left anything out. I would just reinforce what you said about the actionability of it. What I say to people is I'm accredited in other psychometrics, and most people that I speak to, especially at senior levels, have used them before or felt they've been assessed before. But actually, this has got such a big so what factor for me. So you can quite often have conversations about personality and what's not to like. I'm learning more about myself. I'm learning more about you guys. And, you know, we can figure out what that means for how we communicate. But oftentimes after those sessions, people are left with a bit of a, well, so what? Whereas with the GCI, for me, that actionable side of it means that there is a big so what factor. Well, so what? Well, this can really influence a more dynamic approach to talent management, to how you use people, to how you get their best energies, the best version of themselves. You can directly align people to the business planning cycle. You know, you might want different energies when you're in your ideation stages compared to your execution planning stages, for example. And there is so much more that you can do with it once you know where people get their energy for making an impact in the world around them.
Yeah. And one thing that I really appreciate about it is it helps us to understand ourselves and others a bit more, again, to the part of like bringing clarity versus assumptions. Mm-hmm. So that even with ourselves, so folks, I will say, while I have my highest score is game changer, which means that I bring transformational ideas to bear. I get my energy that way about being able to really use my creativity. Well, that's my highest. My lowest is polishing. So polishing is about innovating, iterating. It's about that standard of excellence. Now, having a low score in it does not mean that I am, air quotes, bad at those things. It just means that that's not where I get my energy from. And it's really interesting because where I find that showing up for myself, again, heighten my own sense of awareness, is in typos. Because I wanted to go on to the next thing, which is my implementer energy. And so I'm like, it's good enough. Keep it going. Keep it moving. And so that actually, so two things that really stand out to me about that. One, I don't have to feel bad about myself per se. Like, oh, that's just, you know, I'm bad at that. I just can't do that to feel like, I don't know, it could go the extreme of like, I'm not smart because no. It has nothing to do with that, you know? And so it helps me to that. And it helps if I'm in a team setting, it helps other people understand and think about how best to utilize me. So if I have a lower score in polishing, then the best way to use me for the betterment of the team and myself and me is not to have me be the final eyes on something per se, or not may have me not lead that innovating, iterating element of what we're doing. And so it helps us to understand, well, let's call in the person who has more of that energy. And so you can really think about how, if you're thinking about, this is very tactical, so it might sound bad, but like a chessboard, you know, you want to know where the pieces are on the board and how do you put them, you know, at the right place at the right time. And so I think that just for the audience to give you an understanding, when we say like, it's highly actionable, it's an understanding that you have for yourself and you within the team, and also the team to understand those dynamics as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I refer to it as enabling really dynamic talent management. It helps you to think differently about where you place people and when you place them. Again, coming back to the notion of the job description, you know, the illusion that one person can do everything to the same standard that's on a particular job description is again, it's an illusion. It just doesn't make sense. Whereas if you're looking for energy for impact, you might use the same person on a whole series of different programs of work rather than in a specific job. So it allows you to just think about people differently. And of course, don't forget that if you're not high in one of the proclivity areas, it doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means you might have to more consciously I do this because I think of putting my hat on. I might want to put my implementer hat on because I'm in implementation phase. And I might find that really tedious if I didn't consciously make that effort to put that hat on and tell myself that that's the stage that I'm in at the moment. So, yeah, it's genuinely interesting. As you said earlier, Sean, it changes the language in businesses because people then find it really safe to talk about people in terms of the proclivities that they are and how they might be used differently. And it helps play to people's best strengths. So what's not to like about it? We've all got more energy and we're all playing better.
I love the fact that you brought up the safety element, because it does take away this air of judgment, of negativity and authenticity, just honesty about, hey, you have more energy and less energy in these areas. So let's talk about the right place to have you plug in. What do you think? And then, you know, and teammates can use it openly and honestly. I ran a few workshops with leadership teams, and it's amazing to watch the team be able to shift and come together. It's really interesting. I came home after doing a workshop with a client, and my husband asked me, like, how did it go? And I went into, you know, very verbose, telling him all the things, and he just looks at me and he says, so what you mean is that you walked into a room of a bunch of individuals, and by the time you're done with your workshop, it was a team. And I was like, ah, yes, that. But it does, it creates this element of being able to work with each other. And the language part's really interesting, because I think in business, there's so much language that we're just borrowing words per se, that, and words that we may or may not be very attached to, or even in like a description about ourselves. And we're just, well, I heard somebody else say this, and I think this sounds right, so I'll use this. But what I love partly about the GC, and that's in utilizing GC Translate and the chat function, is that you can actually take a whole new perspective to that, and you transform the way you're talking about yourself, the way you're talking about the organization, in a way that feels authentic in a whole new way.
Yeah. And remember, of course, in terms of making decisions about people and where people are, there's no such thing as an organization, are there? Because an organization made a decision, not ever. It's the people in the organization. And this is what I mean about the people thing. It's like, it's people making decisions about each other and making assessments about each other, about what we may or may not be very good at. So I think it's also really important to remember that everybody has a voice in this. Because if we feel that somebody's not at their best in a leadership position, if we're the person in that position and thinking about how somebody isn't currently delivering what we need from them, there's a very high chance that person also isn't satisfied or energized right now. It's very unlikely that they're feeling completely on top of everything and there's this mismatch in expectation or assessment. So it helps to bring the person into the conversation too about, are you energized right now? Is this the most energized you've ever been? And if not, why not? What more do you need? What else would help? Are we using you in the right way? Or would you rather be doing something else? You know, these are adults that we're employing, so they are capable of having those conversations.
And when we're talking about energy, it's also a bit of a neutral word. Again, it's not good or bad per se. I mean, yes, someone can have good or bad energy, but when you ask someone, are you energized by this? It's just a different lens, you know, than even saying, are you satisfied with your job? It's a different approach to the
question. Oh, Shauna, you are so right. That is spot on, isn't it? It is a much safer language for people to want to step into the conversation about how they're feeling right now. Yeah, that's a brilliant point.
Yeah. And I think it's a really interesting thing. When I'm working with clients who are looking at their leadership team and the dynamics, we all know, but that's an assumption. Oftentimes, a leadership team, those spots on that leadership team don't become vacant very often. A lot of times people get into that leadership level and they're looking to stay for whatever the reasons. The reason I'm bringing this up, because I love the fact that the GC Index allows us to actually pause and look at the current landscape of the leaders and say, what energy are we potentially are missing within this group of people? And because a client that I had, there were six people on the leadership team and they over-indexed in the game changer energy. And they were very low indexing in strategy energy. So you can think about for the audience, what that can mean is, you see a lot of possibility in things as a game changer. So you're just either bringing to the table constantly and chasing new ideas because you're so inspired and you're so energized by that new possibility. Mm-hmm. And when you're lacking within that cohort, within that group, that strategist energy of, to your point earlier, when you were talking about yourself, that why? How does this make sense? Where are the data that I can connect that, you know, again, so like, how do you actually start to course correct some of the things that are going on within this team? But if you're just trying to hire someone because they fit a job description, they look good on paper, you like them as a human. I'm not saying those things are air quotes wrong, but you can see that it's a completely different lens to thinking about what does this leadership team need from an energy, from a what energizes them and what they bring forward every day to maximize the impact and contribution.
Yeah. And what you made me think about as you were speaking then, Shauna, too, was about hierarchy and the relevance of that anymore. So I know that's a whole other subject that we could talk Please. About. However, when you're talking about energy for impact and making sure that your teams or programs of work are populated with the right energy at the right time to enable, you know, the highest kind of standard of delivery, well, then the hierarchy to a degree, or the technical hierarchy in terms of the org chart, becomes irrelevant, because your strategist might not be in what you're currently thinking of as the leadership team. You might have strategy energy a couple of layers down. You know, so where are your strategists? So in your organizational example, where are they? Let's do an impact map across the organization, or at least across a few more levels, to see whether we have strategist energy that we're not currently optimizing. Let's get them in. It's a developmental opportunity. It's a chance to shine, but it's also a chance to make sure that you plug in what is a gap in this team. Another illusion, you see. Another illusion that you've got the team, therefore you have everything. Maybe not. Where else can you find it?
Yeah. So talk a bit about what does it look like when you're working with an organization? Because I want to provide further context for the audience on how this is integrated into the process of working with someone. And I'll share some of the things. I've given a little bit of examples. I mentioned I'll run workshops. I'll do coaching and consulting with people in it. Talk about what does it look like when you're working with a client, and what type of clients do you actually work with?
Oh, well, my clients come from so many different areas, work, public sector, private sector, different sizes as well. Although as my clients have built up over the last couple of years, what I'm seeing is the majority fall into what might be described as small to medium enterprises, maybe not big enough yet to employ a full-time me, but nevertheless places a high value on the people agenda and wants to make sure that they get some of the cultural elements right. They're probably in a scale-up position, needing to sort of shift the dynamic to maybe it started to think about including some more organizational context and structures to enable that scale up to take place. And all of a sudden, guess what? When they do that, it has an impact on the culture. So typically, these organizations might have moved from what might be like a game-changing culture, a very innovative culture, just in that startup phase, and they've grown to be something else and have then gone to almost instinctively implement things that you might associate with bigger corporates, thinking it's the right thing to do to support the scale up, but it can have quite a detrimental impact then on the culture. Then they notice a bit of the change, and then they tend to give me a call and I do some work with them. So yeah, the work can be lots of different ways. Like you, Shauna, I do some coaching, and I always power my coaching with the Game Changing Index, and I power most of my workshops with the Game Changing Index, actually, but only if that fits Likewise. The client and where they're at. Yeah. So how it tends to manifest is that we will build something that's real life as a workshop for the client's organization that is meaningful, because I don't want to do Game Changing Index in a bubble that then we lose the so what factor. So it's about what's going on for them right now. Mm-hmm. Where are they right now? Because you can only start from where you're at. And where do you want to get to? And how can we use looking through the GCI lens to power some of that work? So that tends to be how it plays out.
Makes a ton of sense. And so I've used it in that capacity. I've used it within an organization related to 5-year planning. You know, and I was actually kind of amazed at how cheesy, because I'm using this word, because this is all about impact, right? But I was actually pretty amazed by how impactful it was for an organization, again, to use this as a lens to their 5-year planning. So what that meant to a big degree was just how they were going to approach the process of 5-year planning. I think that there is further application, which I didn't get into with that exact client, which is actually the planning itself that can be used. But it was literally just aligning them, their team and the leaders of the various organizations that were owning certain parts of that planning. How are they going to approach it? How are they going to involve their team and really maximize the energy that was, you know, everyone's energy to get what they needed out of it?
Well, because the ultimately the business is only going to be successful if the leadership team is aligned. So using this to help some of that alignment or to smooth the alignment, it can be really, really powerful. So there's another client that I work with who, to give a more specific example, wanted to work on their winning behaviors. This really resonates with a leadership athlete like you. Shauna, so thinking about the winning behaviors, and we were inspired by sport actually to think about how to approach that, because we can talk about winning behaviors and all, as you know, go away from the table and think that we've understood and think we have the same interpretation of what a particular set of words relating to a behavior means. But actually, we did a whole workshop that helped to really drill down to granular level of detail. Exactly what do we mean by this behavior, and how will that play out, and how are we going to hold each other accountable for that? And then as we started to do that work, we looked through the GCI lens on that to see if that sort of changed the shape of it at all. So yeah, really, really, really powerful. And another client business was planning their 5-year strategy, and we actually did, during a break, we actually populated some key elements of the strategy with the energy profiles, with the proclivities, so that we knew at stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four, et cetera, whether we'd need more game changer, more strategists, more polisher, et cetera. And it really helped them to think about how they might use different people than they previously had at different stages of the business planning cycle. So, yeah, incredibly powerful.
Yeah. Thank you for giving those examples. And I hope the audience, as you're listening, you're hearing, we're talking about, this is the actionability that we've talked about, right? Absolutely. You can actually put it in, again, you can see it's not just, I'm a game changer strategist, I'm a strategist game changer. And to your point, so what? And then you check it at the door and you're like, well, that was an interesting exercise, and you forget about it. This is something that you integrate into your daily work, into how you're working with people, how you're running the organization. Again, when we talk about using it to maximize contribution and impact, it goes company-wide. And again, with that focus on what is the company, what's the impact the company, the business impact the company is actually striving for. So again, thank you for giving those concrete examples. I think it's really important. Another concrete example that I think is really interesting is, we've mentioned job descriptions a few times. I mentioned roles, responsibilities. Again, these AI tools can be game changing, air quotes, game changing in creating those. Because again, I think what happens is people say, this role is open on the team. Well, what was the last job description that we used for it? Okay, let's polish it up and get it out the door. Well, actually, this allows us to say, hey, you know what? Let's use these tools. Let's take a fresh look at the job description. So again, it's a very, very tangible example, or your LinkedIn about section, you know, and it is really, it just is a much different way of empowering and putting tools in people's hands. Once you work with Dawn, once you work with me, and you've integrated the GC index, it is something that actually becomes on you as the client to then own and carry forward. So there's all sorts of ways to adopt it and start to use it within the organization. And I think I said earlier around, like, you know, it's actually working when the language has changed within the organization.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. I found that as well. In one or two of my clients who have gone larger on GCI, the language is changing in how and how they're using it in the team often, on a daily basis. So it's quite incredible.
So if people are hearing this and they're interested in working with you, do you work only with people in the UK, or do you work globally with organizations that are global in nature?
I currently only work with people in the UK, but
here's an opportunity, folks.
Travel.
Absolutely. And to that point,
it's a good point, Shauna. The important point is I work with somebody who really wants to make a difference. That's who I love to work with, people who really care. They really get this, because it's not a transactional thing. It's a transformational thing. So it's about wanting to make a difference, wanting to be in a different place, and really understanding that people are at the heart of that. And as long as that box is checked, I will work with anybody from any sector in any country.
Yeah. Now, I'm glad you said that. At the beginning, we were talking about how we're very similar in ways and how we get on really well. And I mentioned, you know, we truly have become good friends. And it's interesting because I use the same language when someone says to me, tell me about your ideal client. And it really comes down to the bare bones of, do you want to make a difference? Do you want change? Are you willing to do the things to get yourself off the rock to where you need to be?
Yes.
It's so simple, but it really does come down to that because, you know, do you want to embrace something, or are you going to see something and be like, oh, that was interesting. Let me go back to what we've been doing that hasn't been working, that stuck me on this rock. But you know, and so it's like, because I can only do so much in that instance. Again, I truly believe it is a partnership. And it's interesting because there could be at times when I'll work with someone and, or, you know, an organization, and it'll uncover an interesting element. And we'll talk about it. I'm like, are you seeing this? Yes, I'm seeing this. I'll say, okay, well, are you willing to do anything about it? And sometimes I get, no. And I don't take it as not ever. I really think that sometimes we have to, there's a bit of like awareness then that we're raising, or could be, and then there's the element of, well, am I willing to do something about it? And then there's the element of the action. I really think there's three distinct sort of buckets that we have to go through. So, and I say this partly for the audience, you may find yourself in one of those three areas. And, you know, but again, it just comes down to, am I willing to accept and continue to perpetuate what is going on? Or, and, you know, and there's an element of rounding the corner to become willing and then take the action to create that change with the organization, that change that you're making so much with the work you're doing.
Yeah. And remember, our clients are people as well. So you know, we aren't always that sort of logical. We aren't machines. So sometimes part of our role, Shauna, and I think from what you've said, it's really similar to mine, where sometimes we are the person who may be the first person in a while who's held a mirror up and asked the person to look into it and really see what's there and what we see as the external party coming in. And sometimes that will take time to percolate, you know, because our clients aren't robots. So they might, the timing is everything, and the timing might not quite be right for them to own it, but they will have seen it. Will have heard it, and it may be that the timing is right later on for them to come back to it or reflect on it, or to think about, you know, when it might fit with other things that are going on. So yeah, that's another one of my phrases, that timing's everything.
Yeah.
And this is a never-ending journey, isn't it? You know, organizational improvement, cultural change, it is an adventure that never stops.
truly it is. So we have had a wonderful discussion. I am so grateful that we've done this together today. Thank you for continuing the work that you're doing. I believe it's necessary and important. Thank you for your fantastic LinkedIn posts. As I mentioned, folks, again, follow Dawn. You will be glad you did. And so, are there anything I like to ask every guest? Are there just a couple key takeaways that you really want to make sure that the audience has from this episode?
I guess what I would say, Shauna, is don't try and control the uncontrollables. We have to be really okay. We have to be at peace with the idea that we can't control everything. Our lives are better if we're in control of the things around us. They're easier. So we're all trying to do it, but we don't realize that's what we're trying to do. But the moment that we can become to be in a place of peace with the things that are out of our control, the next step for me is that it starts with me. So if I can't control those things, what can I do? So my tip for the top for everybody is, don't wait for somebody else to do it, whatever that it is. If you can believe it starts with me, what's your next move?
So well said. And your post today was along those lines about controlling what the me in it. And because we can't control other people and, you know, how they're going to operate, we can control our mindset, how we are acting. acting or reacting. So fantastic takeaways. Folks, I hope you have enjoyed this episode. Please, again, reach out to Dawn, reach out to me. We're happy to chat with you, to help you, to introduce you to the GC Index. And keep making positive impact, folks. Have an awesome day. Thank you so much, Dawn.
Thank you so much, Sean. It's been a pleasure.